Welcome back to another episode of MP Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today we are here at the Legal Aid Servicers Summit, and joining me, Patrick Journey. Patrick, thank you so much for being here with me today. Thank you for your time. How are you enjoying the conference so far?
Good. Just been here an hour or so down in the roundtable happening downstairs. So really good open conversation to this point. This is my first time at Legal Aid Servicing Summit, and so far really intrigued by the conversations and excited about where it's going.
Yeah, we hope you'll come back next year too.
Yes, that's the plan.
So for those who don't know you, Patrick, let's start with your introduction.
Yeah, so I'm the CFO at Lima One Capital. We are a business purpose originator and servicer based out of Greenville, South Carolina. We have both a call center and retail origination shop, right, and in-house servicing. Been with Lima for about 15-16 months now. Prior to that, I've been CFO or controller of multiple other mortgage shops, ranging from reverse mortgage through to traditional call center in the resi space, and as well as on the investment side.
So you are the money guy.
I'm the money guy.
You you have a very stressful job.
It depends on the day. It depends on the economic life cycle of where we're sitting. But as of where we're sitting right now in this time in age, yeah, it's a little stressful.
So can you break down what you actually do day to day as CFO?
Yeah, that's a good question. My kids ask me that a lot, and you know, they're a little confused when it's like, well, it kind of depends on you know, what's going on. I mean, right now there's a lot of market volatility, right, with, you know, we don't quite know what's happening day to day. We don't know, you know, what's going to happen with Iran. We don't know how that's going to affect, you know, the bond market and the rate market. And so right now there's a lot of trying to read the market, trying to read tea leaves, figure out kind of where things are heading, and trying to make sure that, you know, as Lima One, we can react both, again, on the origination side, right, which is probably more my primary focus. And then, you know, as we're looking on the servicing side of the house, you know, what downstream impacts could there be? Right? Is there a potential effect of a recession that we have to be planning for, where we will see a spike in delinquencies? And, you know, what does that do to our staffing model? And how do we have to prepare for that type of downstream activity?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit, each day is kind of unique right now, but it's also what makes the job exciting.
So how did you end up getting into lending in the first place?
100% by accident. So I started my career in public accounting. Happened to get onto a client that was a reverse mortgage originator and servicer, and I found it to be one of the most fascinating things in the world. At that point, you know, early kind of mid-20s, I had no idea what a reverse mortgage was. I had a mortgage, but had no idea about a reverse mortgage, and kind of found both the business side and the lending side to be quite unique and fascinating, and had an opportunity to go join that company as their controller. And have been in the lending space ever since.
So you must be really good at math.
That could be better, I think. But yeah, it's,
can you
know,
multiply large numbers just like a calculator?
A calculator, yes. I need a calculator at all times.
So for people who don't know Lima One, what do you guys actually do?
Yeah, so we are in a niche market. There, a business purpose lender, so still primarily resi lending. We do expand into multifamily, but it's supposed to be a primary resi type of multifamily arrangement. Now, you know, I could have some retail space in there, but we'll lend on the resi side of it. But we don't do direct to the consumer. It's not owner occupied. So it's a lot of lending on to contractors for new construction, you know, property development, on the investor side, you know, people who are doing, you know, large properties for rental or, you know, Airbnb. So it's purely on the investment side of the sector.
And you work with flippers too,
yep.
Right?
Correct.
Okay, so this is more of a personal question on my side, because my mom and I used to flip a lot of houses back when we lived in Missouri. And for us to get a loan, like, what qualifies to get a loan? Like, what kind of resume, I guess, you need to have to get a loan?
It's a great question. You know, from the credit side, it looks very similar to, you know, you're going for a loan for yourself, for your own home. Where it differs, right, is we're going to look very specifically at the experience. Have you flipped before, right? Mm-hmm. To do business with us, you have to have experience. You have to have output that we can verify. Mm-hmm. You know, our minimum starts that you have to have done three homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's your first time flipping, we're probably not the right lending shop for you.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get a couple under your belt, you know, we've got a great fix and flip program available, to help you out, to help you grow your business, right, and kind of help you move to the next step of the phase of that growth.
What if the client was only flipping with cash and never worked with a bank before?
That's how a lot of them start. Again, especially when you look at where we're coming in and saying, hey, I need you to have experience. I need to know that you can execute a deal before I will, right, help finance for you. That's where a lot are going to start. And so to me, it's going to look more of you've built up a verifiable business, right? We can go look at the property, see what you've done, see what the work is, what your timelines were from, you know, purchase of the asset through to, you know, flipping and selling. Our products are mostly 13-month time horizons on the loan, and right, making sure that you can do the product, the project in that timeline. We do extend up to about 19 months on occasion, but we prefer in that 13-month range. But then it would just look, you know, you'd go submit your credit profile. We'd go do background checks, credit, look at the business itself, and make sure it's viable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, from there we'll offer you, you know, terms to help you achieve that property.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at a loan, what makes it a good deal?
It depends. For me, you know, I do my best not to get in deal-specific questions like that. You know, that's typically where I come in. It's going to be more on the pricing side. And again, you know, where do we think the loan should price at? You know, where's our return going to be on that asset? Mostly it's going to be, you know, what's the loan-to-value that you're looking at? You know, what are you trying to lend up to? And, you know, what's your construction budget going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Those are going to be probably the two big questions you're going to look at. Again, experience is going to be a big one, making sure that you know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
If, again, a first-time flipper, you don't know what you're getting into, that's not going to be the right clientele for us. You know, we want somebody who's got experience under their belt, know that they're going to be able to execute the job. Because, you know, for my seat as CFO, right, where I'm looking at this is saying, I don't want an asset to be sitting on the books forever, right? I want a borrower that we can support who, again, they're running a business. They're going to be able to get that property, complete the project, sell it, get to the next property.
Mm-hmm.
And so where our business is unique, and I think it's a lot of fun versus a traditional resi mortgage shop, is, resi, I'll do a loan with you once, maybe I'll do a second with you. But then I'm waiting for you to move. In this case, great, you'll flip the house. You know, you sell it in 5-6 months. You're taking that capital, moving to the next house. Great, I'm doing another loan with you in 5 or 6 months and kind of repeating that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so the customer attachment is pretty high. And that to me is where a lot of the fun comes in and being able to project out. It's not just I'm helping you buy a house. It's I'm helping you build a business. And, you know, we're providing that liquidity to you.
So this is the second time you're mentioning first-time flippers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a story to share about a deal that went completely wrong?
I on the first time, I don't know, because we've not done those with Montana Lima. I do see some of the horror stories a little bit on the back end, right, where there's a deal that I know of that was before my time at Lima, but where we had to go in and finish the flip. You basically foreclose on the property, take control over it, and finish it to be able to sell to liquidate that asset. We've got a handful of those that have happened over time. That to me is very much a horror story of, hey, you know, borrower took on more than they can chew, and sometimes it's wrong time, wrong place. That there's external circumstances there that they can't control. Or times again, it's a lack of experience, and they weren't able to complete that project, and maybe were too ambitious. But yeah, there are times where we have to go in as the owner of the asset there or the owner of the loan and complete that project for them to be able to try to get that property out the door.
Mm-hmm. What about higher interest rates? Do those change things for you guys recently?
It does. That's where I think our business model is a bit unique, right? Where on our pure rental program, it looks very, you know, it's a DSCR product, kind of a non-QM product, right? It is very, very rate sensitive, right? So the rate movements we've seen here in the last 2 weeks, we are very much impacted by that. And we are seeing that, investors that were looking, a month ago, now maybe are sitting tight on potential deals while they're waiting to see what's going to happen with the rate volatility. On our new construction and fix and flip product, they're less rate sensitive. There is obviously still some rate sensitivity in there. You know, people are looking at the interest that they're going to pay over that life cycle, but it's a, you know, a 1 to 2 year loan versus you know, our rental program, which is a 30-year fixed note. So that's, it is interesting seeing that side of the business where the new construction, the flippers that we look at are much more fee and cash sensitive, right, versus the rental investor, right, who is hyper rate sensitive.
Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, what's been the hardest part of lending in today's market?
Volatility, by far. I mean, we've been in a cycle where, you know, when we were talking about this earlier in the roundtable, where, you know, 6 years ago you had the lowest rates in history, and you've got an environment where people took advantage of that and moved into investor categories, did, you know, flip some houses, retained those for rental properties, and built up a portfolio. For us, it's very positive. They built a business. It's a new potential person to lend to. The other side is, you know, they may have an asset sitting with a 3 or 4% mortgage, and you're looking at rates that are 6.5 plus right now, and they're still looking for cash flow for the next deal. And so it's trying to convince that person that, yes, there's a worthwhile investment here for them to refinance that asset at a 6.5% rate because they can do a cash out and get to their next property and keep their business moving. Whereas on the fix and flip side, again, it's much more fee sensitive, much more cash sensitive, where they're trying to turn that as fast as possible. So seeing that volatility is always tough. You know, we got pretty close to stable, you know, over the past year until, you know, really, I guess this 2026 in total has been full of a lot of economic uncertainty. But to me, where the mortgage market itself thrives is when we have some semblance of stability, right? I don't need rates super high or super low. I just want a sense of, you know, that I know they're not going to move a point over a month. And knowing that, you know, all indicators are, you know, home price appreciation is kind of leveling off. That makes things a little bit easier to lend against instead of continually projecting what's the value going to be at the end of a project. I can know that, hey, what I can underwrite at today is going to be pretty close to where the house is going to be or the property is going to be in, you know, 12 months or 24 months.
Mm-hmm. So for those people who are also flipping houses, does it matter what kind of houses they have flipped in the past to qualify for a loan at Lima One?
It could. Again, experience is hyper critical. If you're, you know, used to flipping duplexes, and all of a sudden you go into, you know, $1 million-plus type of flip, mm-hmm. we're going to look at that very differently. Like, we'll still look at your experience and see, okay, is this a viable deal? We'll look at the property side of it and the construction budget and figure out, is that viable? But, yeah, we're going to put a lot more scrutiny on that versus, you know, hey, you're constantly flipping duplexes and that's going to be your continued business model. Same goes the other way, right? If you're flipping mega, you know, mega mansions, and then all of a sudden you go down to that lower tier, right? It's mm-hmm. the same concept of, you know, this market here, and you're coming downstream. Well, does that experience translate? Are you going to try to maybe, you know, create a property in the back end that's going to outprice the current market and not be able to sell? Mm-hmm. So we are trying to project both sides of that.
What if it's super cheap houses, like the ones that cost, you know, $12,000, and then you put like new drywall up and new mm-hmm. windows, and it sells for $60,000?
Those are great scenarios, I think. We have a really good client in the Las Vegas area that does a little bit more than that, but, you know, maybe, you know, $200,000 homes that they'll flip them in 3 to 4 months, and sell them in, you know, about $300,000. And they've got a great business model doing that. They're a great partner with us. And we've seen a lot of success in that attachment point, right? A little bit that's come to, they know their market. Again, they're very intentional about the assets they're going after. And they're looking at it saying, hey, we'll buy a house for $200,000. I know I can upfit it with $300,000 of effort and sell it for $300,000 because they're hypersensitive to what that environment is. And again, it comes to experience. They're doing, you know, 15, 20, 30 loans or properties a year. And so they're very, very experienced in that specific place.
So, Patrick, what is the recipe to become rich? What is the recipe to become successful and how to grow the business without sacrificing quality?
It's an evolution, right? And you know, especially if you look at the mortgage market itself, it's the economy itself is always evolving and growing, and you know, mortgages is hyper local within there. Where you know, we've got a client in Las Vegas that their business model works and works perfectly there. You know, you take that same group and you move them to Charlotte. It may not work there, and it may have to look very different, and they have to be adaptable. So I think the big thing is knowing your market, you know, and being adaptable to what your environment is. And where we sit in the rate environment today, and knowing that, again, rates have gone up the last few weeks, and we're still a little bit uncertain to exactly how they're going to move here, really depending on what's going to happen, you know, in Iran and, you know, how potential oil prices will shift where what people are paying at the pump and how that's going to have downstream effect on all their goods and services, mortgage rates are going to move accordingly with that, right? And it's not directly tied to us, but it is going to impact what our product looks like. And so being adaptable to what's happening around us and being able to say, hey, what we know today may change tomorrow and we have to grow and learn and become smarter. I think that to me is the key, is the willingness to learn and adapt.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you're seeing right now that people might be underestimating?
I don't know, because I think everyone, at least what the people I talk to, what I see and hear is, I think there is a good amount of skepticism on what's going on within the market, and people are very sensitive to that. So I don't know if there's necessarily anything that people are underestimating at this point, but I do think there's still enough uncertainty that there's a bit of a fear kind of baked in. Again, my viewpoint is I want stability wherever we can get it. I think that's going to create a thriving mortgage environment. And we're sitting here today with, you know, a potentially very unstable environment. And that's just, you know, leads to potential chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think essentially people are underestimating anything. I think it's more of people are maybe a little bit more walking on eggshells and kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop. And that's just, going to create uncertainty.
Okay. So speaking of chaos, can a person get a loan at Lima One and, for example, like $30,000 and mm-hmm. then move to Mississippi and use those $30,000 to flip three houses?
No, because we're going to write to the specific property.
Ah.
So you can't, it's not just an open line to that company.
Man, that was such a good idea.
No, I like where you're going with that, but no, it's going to be, you're going to have a property. So what we will do there is like that type of client comes in, they would say, hey, I'm, you know, here's my business model, here's my plan, here's what I want to do. Again, I want to, you know, flip three houses in Mississippi. We'll look at you and say, yep, we'll approve you for, you know, a total debt facility up to, call it $3 million. But you won't be able to actually access those funds until you have a property you're physically working on, and we will underwrite to that property.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any, like, states or cities you would not, like, write off, like Detroit?
So we are in 48 states.
Okay.
But we are not in every city in every state.
Mm-hmm.
So there are definitely certain MSAs that, not necessarily that we won't lend there, but it's going to have to be the right borrower, the right deal for us to really consider that area. We've seen noise in Baltimore recently, I think Philadelphia as well, where there have been some certain bad actors. And so it kind of makes you hit pause and say, okay, who are we doing business with these areas? How do we want to keep doing business in this market? And you kind of have to look at, you know, was it an appraiser, was it an underwriter? What's the factor that's happening within those markets that's causing potential issues? And for us, we do take a little bit more of a conservative lending approach than some other shops. And so we might say, yeah, we'll kind of hit pause in that market for the time being, just to make sure that we're not perpetuating a potential bad situation.
Mm-hmm. So if you were starting a lending company today, what would you focus on?
Automation. I mean, that's the world's going into, you know, AI is really big right now, going into automation at almost all costs. To me, I would very much focus on how do I get the most volume with the least personnel and impact possible. You know, a couple things I look at in our business are, you know, our staffing models and staffing efficiencies. One of the big metrics I look at is what's our loan to employee ratio. And to me, any way that I can help kind of widen that out and have as many loans per person available to us is a good thing. It's good for the market. And so I would look at automation at throughout the entirety of the mortgage process, originations as well as servicing.
So speaking of AI, what are your thoughts?
I'm a big proponent. Uh-huh. Actually, kind of like we just got a utilization report today from my CIO that we use Claude. That apparently I use Claude more than anywhere else in the company probably combined. I'm a massive component of it within reason, right? We do still have to be careful with it. We still have to make sure there's, you know, our viewpoint is there's got to be human in the loop. We can't have AI just running on its own. We want to use AI to enhance what we're doing. And I don't look at it as it's going to replace people. I look at it as it's going to make my people better. It's mm-hmm. going to make us more efficient. And it's going to help drive productivity, not reduce individuals. Where we use it today is still pretty limited. We're constantly testing new products. We're constantly testing new options to see, does this make our business better? Does this make our people more efficient? And you know, we've been using Claude recently. So far, I've been a huge proponent. I think the opportunity for where it takes lending is, you know, really unknown but really exciting. For me specifically, in my seat, again, it's how does it make my people better? Can it help make credit decisions? I don't know if I would go that far at this point, but I think what it could do is, again, you take a property, you're trying to flip three houses in Mississippi. We can use AI and we can use Claude to help do some market research in significantly less time than it will take an underwriter to do it today. Mm-hmm. So it makes that underwriter's capacity grow, and it helps them not just do your three loans, but, you know, the three loans in Louisiana, the three loans in Alabama, all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So AI is like a dream come true for you guys.
Oh, very much so. Maybe not for everybody. For me, yes.
So is there something that you believed early in your career that you don't believe anymore?
Yes. I think, you know, early in your career, you kind of go into things eyes wide open, but you think people who are, you know, as a CEO, people who are in a C-suite, you think they have all the answers. You think they've seen everything. And you get there and you realize that's not the case at all. You know, while yes, I think my experience in mortgage has been, you know, pretty wide and deep to this point in time, I know there's something tomorrow that's going to come across my desk that I've never seen before in my career. And I'm going to have to figure it out just like everybody else. I think AI is a perfect example of that. You know, you look back 3-4 years ago, we weren't having a conversation about, hey, how can AI help drive productivity, or what does AI do to my staffing models? That wasn't a concept. There was still the concept of how do I get more productivity, but not through this avenue, right? So I think it's very much the – when you start your career, you look at people and say, oh, my gosh, they must know everything. They've been doing this for so long. And then you get into that seat and, you know, there's very much that moment of like, yeah, I'm not any smarter than the next guy. Right. Maybe my experience is a little bit different and I've tailored it in a different way to you know, how I leverage it. But we're all still learning and growing.
Mm-hmm. So, Patrick, going back to how stressful your job is, yeah, what keeps you up at night in your role?
If you ask my wife, I sleep through everything and anything. So nothing keeps me up at night. We've got 4 young kids and she'll make the argument that she's the one always getting up with them. So her comment would be nothing keeps me up at night. In reality, it's, you know, a lot of, again, looking at where the environment's going, what's going to happen to the business, trying to be in front of things, where we're sitting in the market today. Again, our staffing model has been front and center, and how are we operating as efficiently as we can? And I think anytime you're talking about you know, staffing models and potentially disrupting people's lives, like, that's always a tough conversation. And to me, that's something that's always, you know, in the front of my mind of, you know, hey, if I'm trying to drive productivity and I'm trying to drive certain staffing efficiency ratios, at some point there could be a person involved in that, you know, discussion point that they don't know yet, and I'm thinking about this months in advance. Mm-hmm. I think those types of things are always very tough in mortgage. And again, we're a very cyclical industry, and, you know, when the times are good and, you know, financing is cheap, there's jobs aplenty. And when this market swings the other way, you do have to make some very hard choices. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the hardest part about this business.
Okay, so what, from your perspective, what key drivers of loan economics in mm-hmm. today's environment that you see?
Yeah, so again, I try to look at it pretty high level, just again, loans per person across the company. Again, we look at origination and servicing, and I look at it all together. We then do get hyper-specific into each department as well, right? And so, again, as I step back, I'm looking at a global level, but that turns into, great, how does each department operate? Within our servicing team, you know, we'll look at our performing, non-performing assets, how many loans to staff within each phase there. Same on the origination side, processing, underwriting, closing, all the way through. And then even into the back office, we do the same thing, where I don't necessarily look at it from a loan to people purely on the back office. I look at it a little bit more as, you know, percentage of revenue being allocated to the back office itself, and trying to make sure that, you know, again, my job is to make sure that we are running a profitable business. And I want to make sure my dollars are allocated appropriately to ensure that we can do that. And so, you know, if the front end is, hey, I have to have, you know, 5 loans for every person, well, that's going to create, you know, call it a dollar of revenue, and that dollar is going to be allocated across the business, right? So it is a hybrid model there, but, you know, I try to, again, the easy concept is I'm going to look at each department differently. I'm going to have a conversation with each, you know, department head and leader, say, this is what I'm trying to hold you to. You get to a point where you have too many metrics that you're trying to manage and too many data points. And so that's where you kind of step back and say, look, there's going to be 1,000 different conversations, but as long as we're hitting a top line efficiency number, like, we'll be profitable. And, you know, I think I've been through enough companies and enough cycles that, you know, I know that there's a certain level. Like, the big one for me is my minimum bar is 1.2 loans per FTE across the company at large. That's what my origination model has to be. I think that's still probably a little bit inefficient for where I really want us to be, but I know at that level we can be profitable. Anything below that is where I start to get nervous that, you know, my staffing costs and my operating costs are going to be too high.
Mm-hmm. What's one thing you'd change about this industry if you could?
Volatility. If I could just make it nice and easy, I know what every day is going to look like, right? I know that, you know, rates are going to be flat. You know, home prices are going to go up 1% every single year, guaranteed, and nothing more, nothing less. If I can make it as static as possible, that would be ideal.
And finally, before we end this episode, how can people get in touch with you, Patrick, and learn more about Lima One?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, limaonecapital.com. They can reach us through there. They can also find me on LinkedIn and reach out to me on LinkedIn, and happy to connect and talk more.
Well, I don't know about our listeners, but this was very informative to me. I'm going to go head over to limaone.com and get a loan to build 3 houses,
three houses in Mississippi. Or Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah, you can
Those
do that
are my
too.
Two options.
we can help you with that.
Thank you, Patrick, so much for
Thank
joining
much.
Me today. I hope you enjoyed the Legal League Servicer Summit and come back next year.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to MP Access. Stay up to date with daily mortgage news, featured stories, and our latest episodes of the podcast at themortgagepoint.com. Don't miss out, and we'll see you next week.